Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Monday, February 7th, 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is my fellow Forbes 30 under 30, a.k.a. the LaCroix Poppy himself, a.k.a. Tim motherfucking Geddes.
A.k.a. another person just like yourself that has beaten Sifu.
I can't believe it,
Bless. It was a long and arduous journey this last weekend, but we got there, boys. And are we going for the plat? We're gonna try.
Tim, I love to hear this.
The one trophy, I'm like, I don't know if I could beat the entire game under 25. I just don't know. But you know what I also don't know? That I can't do it. So let's try.
That's what it's about. That's what it's about. I'm happy for this journey for you because I had the same thing where as soon as I beat Sifu, I was like, I don't want to stop playing this game. And I think I can master this game. And so, like, I want to go for the platinum. But then, yeah, I heard about that under 25 trophy, and I was like, that might be the one. That might be the one that makes me tap out. But, you know, it's worth trying. It's a game that I think is super replayable. And so, like, for that, for as much fun as it is, and for, like, how much people are getting into it, people like Tim Geddes, who I don't think traditionally would get super into this kind of game. Like, definitely the fact that you're this into it, I'm like, dude, go for it. I might go for it, honestly, after I get all these review games out the way, because let me tell you, it's review season right now.
Oh, I can smell the leaves changing color, baby.
Because you can smell it in the air. Would you say that this one was easier or more difficult than Cuphead?
It's very, very different, but I think that this one is harder in the way that you're actually learning how to get better. Whereas with Cuphead, it's like, it's not like you're necessarily gaining skills throughout the journey that from level one to the final level, you're like, oh, now I'm a master at this thing. You learn so many different elements of the combat design in Sifu that going back to the earlier levels, I'm like, oh, I feel this in my bones now. Like, I know what to do. It's not just like I'll push through to try to get through the next level. It's like, oh, I am mastering this. I know exactly how to handle these situations and like the reads and tells and all that stuff. And like that to me is the difference between it and Cuphead. I do think there's a lot of similarities though. And I said this a little bit in our review for it, but I now that I've beaten the game and seen everything it has to offer, I can definitely stand by the difficulty is worth pushing through to see the crazy shit they're about to give you next. Like Cuphead was always rewarding you with the next phase of the boss and the beautiful art and animation and all that. This game does that as well in a different way. Instead of it being like classic 2D hand-drawn type animation, it's like insane style that's backed up by the substance of the gameplay in a way that I am extremely impressed by, and I've never seen anything quite like it. We've seen, you know, neon drenched trap music playing in the background type, like that vibe is a thing that we've seen many, many times. John Wick is a perfect example of it, but this game somehow makes it feel unique and like something I've never seen before. And to take one of my favorite aesthetics ever and to ratchet it up to that notch, shout out to Slow Clap.
Shout out to Slow Clap, you know, big round of applause. But also, it's what I mentioned in the review, where talking about the presentation of this game, it is that perfect mixture of a really good art style, really good fidelity with that art style when you're talking about like reflections and how shit like actually looks, right? Like it looks not only just like artfully done, it looks graphically impressive, but then also it's the way they set the scenery in like every single level and the way they like arrange certain rooms and the way they put art on walls. And like, it's fucking it's a fantastic looking game. Like I can't get over it. But Tim, talking about Sifu though, I replied to one of your tweets when you mentioned that you beat it. And I proposed this as a question, right? Or as a suggestion. Mm-hmm. I feel like you're in the place right now. You're in the perfect mindset to pick up a game called Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. Because it is that same exact satisfaction that you're getting out of Sifu that you're going to get out of Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. And I think if you beat Sifu, I think you're primed to be able to get through Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. And I think it's a Tim motherfucking Geddes game.
I mean, it's that bit, Bless, that you really kind of got me with. Because did I download it yesterday? Yeah, Bless, I did.
Oh, let's fucking go. Of course you did.
Did I do that because of you? Yes, I did. But the reality is, I don't think I'm touching this thing anytime soon. There's so many games to play. There's still Sifu to play. I'm still trying to go back. I feel where you're coming from. The thing that I'm worried about, and obviously my Twitters were ablaze with comments from people being like, From Software, when, Tim? What you doing? And I just think that they're different enough. And you tell me if I'm wrong, but I like the idea that Sifu is like a smaller contained experience. There is only 5 levels. You become a master of them because you do them all so many times. Like, I don't want this like long ass version of this game. I like that it was as difficult and challenging as it was, but it's a little more bite-sized.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the way to put it. And I think that's the way I described it as well during our review, which you can catch on youtube.com/comfortingames if you've not listened to our review yet. Sifu does feel like a bite-sized From Software game. Not in the way that, like, actually, no, I was going to say not in the way that's punishing. I guess it is punishing because you literally, like, have to keep up with your age. I guess not in the way that From Software games feel a bit longer and feel a bit more grueling of an experience, and there's a lot more to learn and kind of dig in there, right? I think there's a lot more mechanical depth and even like narrative and story depth to a From Software game, where a Sifu feels like that at a surface level, but done in a way that is stylish and in a way that doesn't feel like it needs to go any deeper than it is because it knows exactly what it is, right? It's an arcade like experience. Sifu is that, whereas From Software, for Sekiro specifically, because I think they're probably the most similar in terms of how they play and how they feel, Sekiro is basically like, what if Sifu went all the way and like went the extra mile in terms of building out a big 30-hour experience of you going through the bosses, of you doing fast-paced combat. They play differently, obviously, but like, I think you go through the same mental motions of like learning a boss and learning their animations and having to counter or having to read combat animations of the bosses and figure out like, all right, they're gonna hit, stop, hit. All right, how do I figure out the rhythm there? And it's not the dodging of Sifu, right? But it is the countering and building up the stagger and then take them out. And so I think it's a lot of the same satisfaction. Playing Sifu reminded me of when I was playing Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. And so I think with that, I think you'd dig it. But yeah, I totally understand putting it off for now because there's a lot to play.
I got it downloaded though, and it's gonna stay on the PS5 for now. So I'll keep you updated, everybody.
Oh yeah, Tim, keep us updated. And we're not done talking about Sifu because, of course, it's KFGD. We're gonna talk about video game news, and today's stories include a Sifu review roundup, what's up with Halo Infinite, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news needs to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, or bronze members or above, get to write in. And silver members or above, get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, if you're listening, if you're watching, and you need to take a second, all right? Walk to your window, open the window, take a whiff. You smell that? Mm-hmm. I know Tim smells that.
I do.
It's review season. A new Kinda Funny Games cast is up right now, and it's our Sifu review. It is Tim, Andy, Tam, and I. We've all played it and have a lot to say about it. That's available right now on youtube.com/kindafunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. And I'll go ahead and say, I think that's a must-listen-to episode of the Games cast.
Dude, it's so good because Bless and Andy are super high on the game and have beaten it. I had not beaten it yet and was getting my ass kicked, but I was really, really into it. And I was giving it like my recommendation. Tam, being the From guy for sure, was a little less high on it. Enjoyed the game still, but like it was probably the most difference of opinion about a game I think we've ever had on the Games cast. And it was interesting because we all liked it at the very least, but there was a lot of contention between the level of quality, and Tim had extremely like well said breakdowns of like why he isn't necessarily vibing with it as much as some other people are.
Yeah, I think it's for sure the most I've ever disagreed with somebody during a review, but it's also, I think, one of the best conversations we've had in terms of like, okay, no, I see where you're coming from. X, Y, and Z thing is like not as good as the other thing, but this is why I like this thing. Oh, this is why I feel good about this thing that you feel bad about. Like, I think it's a must-listen episode for sure, and I think everybody brought their A game on it.
Yeah, and with that, just a real quick thing. You were promoting youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and review season, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. We've been really working hard, and I'm super proud of the team. For first off, I love that we're big enough and diverse enough of a cast now that we can tackle multiple games with a ton of people on. Publishers and developers have been so good, I feel like better than ever, about getting as many codes as possible out to people. Mm-hmm. So it's like been really nice that, for the most part, many people have been able to play the games, so we have like different talking points. But I also love the amount of content we've been putting out, and like Andy and Bless, everyone's been really kicking ass, Barrett, at making content hit embargo time. So I don't want to say expect this every time, but we are trying right now to put out our Gamescast reviews at embargo, Andy's first hour with the game gameplay preview, and the short 1 minute TikTok version of the review, all out at the same time at embargo. And so we appreciate you guys checking them all out. Give us feedback what you think about them, but I think it's a really cool kind of speaking to a bunch of different audiences all at once at that embargo time, so you can look forward to more of that in the future.
Yeah, yeah. And I will say, it's making review season really feel like the holiday, you know. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like an event, and I'm having a blast with it. You know, this is the best review season I think I've ever had, and so shout out to review season. And speaking of review season, your next episode of Gamescast is coming on Valentine's Day, and it's our Horizon Forbidden West review. So get hyped for that, and then write in with your Horizon questions for next week's PS Love You XOXO, where we'll break down all of your Horizon Forbidden West questions answered. Speaking of PS I Love You, we're recording later today, and we're talking about the 10 live service games that Sony is working on. You can catch that live as we record on Patreon or later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. Tuesday, that's tomorrow, I'm taking over Xbox's Twitch channel in celebration of Black History Month. I'll be playing some of my favorite games from Rare Replay. You can tune into that at noon Pacific time on twitch.tv/Xbox to watch live. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Gordon McGuire, James Davis at James Davis Makes, Pranksy, Manny the Bagel Boy Sanchez, and Blackjack. Today we're brought to you by ExpressVPN and Chime, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 7 stories today.
A baker's dozen.
A big news day. Let's start with our number one. We have a Sifu review roundup. I put this at number one because I knew it was going to be me and Tim, and I know Tim has a lot to say about Sifu now that you've beaten it. Right now, Sifu's sitting on Metacritic at an 81 and on OpenCritic at an 80. Mitchell Saltzman at IGN gave it a 9 out of 10 and says, Sifu demands a lot from you. And that's a sword that cuts both ways. Its combat is impeccable with incredibly smooth and impactful animation, deep fighting mechanics, and challenging enemies that really make you fight tooth and nail for every victory. At the same time, the repetition that comes from replaying levels, so you can essentially set a high score and give yourself a chance at completing the rest of the short campaign with what's effectively one persistent pool of lives, can lead to some really frustrating moments with no clear path through outside of just trying and trying until you get better at it, which can be frustrating. On the other side of that vicious learning curve, though, is one of the most impressive beat-em-ups I've ever played, with excellent level design, fantastic music, and once it was all over, a sense of accomplishment and satisfaction that few other video games can provide. And then Ben Reeves at Game Informer gave it a 7.25 out of 10 and says, like a 20-year-old combatant, Sifu comes out the gate strong. Its core combat feels excellent, and the moment-to-moment action looks better than most Hollywood blockbusters. Sadly, as you progress, the action begins to show its teeth and eventually becomes a tiresome grind. Sifu deserves props for its incredible sense of style and tone, but it is also a great example of why growing old isn't always fun. And then,
what a great line. Good for you, Ben Reeves.
Yeah, Ben Reeves was in the Duffy with that one. And then Blessing at Kinda Funny called it a Game of the Year contender. And then, Kevin, if you're able to bring up the TikTok, I should have mentioned this earlier. Of course, like Tim mentioned earlier in the show, we have our little TikTok reviews, our reviews in under 60 seconds. They can grab on that platform.
On YouTube, though. They're also available.
Yeah, it's a John Wick like revenge tale that is equal. Here we go. Kevin's pulling it up. If you can play it from the beginning.
You want like audio and stuff?
Oh, yeah. Hey, I think we're watching through the full thing. Get people the full experience. Sifu is a Game of the Year contender. It's a John Wick-like revenge tale that is equal parts addicting, flashy, and filled with the mechanical depth of a fighting game. I kid you not, the combat and animation is so smooth that at times I felt like I was recreating that famous scene from Ip Man. The game is developer Slowclap's follow-up to their indie cult release, Absolver, but unlike that game, Sifu sheds its multiplayer and live service features while leaning into the things that worked for Absolver: the excellent art style, smooth fighting animation, and the deeply technical combat mechanics. The key to victory in Sifu is to beat every single goon-filled level and take down their badass cast of bosses without depleting your age. Yes, I said age, because with each death, years get added on to your life. This means that you'll need to replay levels over and over again, learning the enemies, mastering combos, perfecting your dodges, and becoming an unstoppable martial artist in order to achieve an ideal run and reach the ending. Playing through Sifu is an exhilarating experience. It's brutal, satisfying, visually stunning, and one of the best beat-em-up games I've ever played. That is why Sifu is a Game of the Year contender.
And there you go.
It's
there
a John Wick like.
Gotta love that loop. Gotta love that.
Shout out to Roger Corney and the TikTok team out there killing it. Tim, you've seen the reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Are these reviews what you expected?
Yeah, you know, I think that they very much are. After playing the game, where I think it's getting a lot of nines from people, and that kind of like feels absolutely right, and where I kind of would lean towards. But then you're seeing some sevens, and it brings the Metacritic down to that 81. That totally sounds right, because this is a game that is brutal, and it's not perfect. It is, I think, so close to perfect in so many ways that it kind of starts to really shine a light on some of the issues the game has, where it is frustrating. They do not do a great job of explaining to you a lot of the mechanics that are the most helpful, most useful things that are going to get you through the game. And I would not have beat this game had I not talked to you and talked to Andy separately about different specific things. I'm like, how am I supposed to do this? And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, the game didn't explain it that way. Like, I think a perfect example is the way that the, and there's so many different words that are similar but different in this game, whether it's dodge, avoid, parry, or guard. Like, they're all similar but different. But the thing where I think it's called avoid, where you hold the guard button down and then move the analog stick and the character kind of like dodges out of the way. The only way the game actually teaches you that is really early in the first level. You jump through a window, and then a mini boss character stands up and he goes to grab you. And then the screen kind of slows for a second and it says, to dodge this, hold the button and move the analog stick. But the way they present it doesn't make me feel like that is a thing that I'm supposed to apply to the rest of the game. That makes it feel like, oh, this is how you dodge grabs, right? So I was going through the game just using that to dodge grabs instead of using it to dodge literally everything. Then I talked to you and you're like, oh, this is how I do it. I'm like, oh my God, totally changed everything. And like, that's just such a small little thing, but I feel like you can multiply that across so many different examples of the game not being clear how it actually wants you to play.
So like, I keep muting my mic because I think somebody's sawing something in the apartment next to me. I don't know if you hear it, but it is a loud sound to me. But yeah, no, I'm totally with you in terms of like the difficulty of the game and how the game, like we talked, there's a big talking point in our review in terms of the obfuscation of like a lot of the systems and how you kind of really got to learn. And that's something that I actually really liked. You know, it's fun playing this game in the review period where there's not guides out there. There's not really many people I can turn to, especially for me, because I was, as soon as I got the code, I was deep into it, right? Like I hit the ground running with the game. And so like being further into the game and being like, all right, I think this works this way. Oh man, okay, I really can't make it to the end of the game without having to like figure out this age situation. So how do I do that? And like, having to slowly like understand all the different systems for me was part of the fun. Like I actually really enjoyed that. And I think that maybe just be part of who I am in terms of what the kind of enjoyment I like to get out of video games. I like learning. I like getting better. But yeah, I also look at other reviews and other takes on it. And I'm like, oh, I totally see where people are coming from in terms of like, this shit is tough and they should teach you some of this shit, because like there are a lot of overlapping systems, especially when you're talking about skill trees and upgrades and then the avoid versus the dodge and like when to counter, when not to counter. There's a lot going on in Sifu. And so I could see ways in which, oh yeah, I could for sure teach some of these things better.
And it's tough because, you know, hindsight's 2020, but here I am dozens of hours into this game. Like I've played a lot. Because I'm not great, I've played a lot more than I think people that have played Souls games before will put into this game just to beat it. But there is a lot of fun stuff to do after you beat it as well. And like, there's a lot of replayability, but I struggle to think like, would I want the 10 hours of my gameplay back that were kind of wasted not understanding how to play the game. And I kind of feel like I would, because I would rather have put those 10 hours in to actually knowing what I was doing with certain mechanics. And that's kind of a bummer. And that's where I think a lot of the frustration comes into play, of the grind of doing things over and over and over, and the way they explain stuff. But having said that, the flip to it is, because I had to grind, that's how I kind of really learned a lot of the things where it's not just kind of, what I appreciate about this game is that it doesn't turn into just memorize Simon Says how to dodge things. It actually becomes muscle memory. It actually becomes like a reactive thing where you know how to react to stuff, instead of just like, okay, up, up, down, down. You know, it's like you're ready for them to come at you in different ways. So I think that 10 hours of wasted time is what taught me that.
Can I ask you then the, I'll call it the golden question now. Is Sifu too difficult?
That's a...
It's a big conversation people are having now.
Yeah, totally. I just wish that it wasn't as like political as it is. I don't think it's too difficult. I think that it is simultaneously very well designed, and I wish that some of the difficulty was designed better, like in all the ways I was just saying. So I don't think it's perfect, but I think that its difficulty is a big part of what it is. Do I think that there should be an easy mode so that other people can enjoy this? Definitely. Do I think that there should be a lot of changes made to make it more accessible in a bunch of ways? Absolutely. Like, even for me, I was having so many issues with various parts of this. They let you remap all the buttons, which is fantastic. I love when a game lets you do that. But I still think the control scheme is just a little convoluted. There's just one too many buttons necessary to do certain actions, like the focus attacks. Like, I don't like that you have to hit a button to activate the thing, use a stick to choose which one you want, and then hit another button, all in not real time. It's slow-mo, but there's still a fight happening. And that just seems like, okay, you should just be able to map this to something different, right? Like, I don't know. Things like that, I feel, are what hold this back from being that perfect experience. But is the game too difficult? Personally, I say no.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think the game's too difficult at all. I actually really like the game's difficulty. And if the game was way easier, I don't think I would love this game as much as I do. Like, I really like the process of dying over and over again and having to really figure out the combos and figure out the animation. And like, I think that's part of the joy of the experience. I think that is a separate conversation from accessibility, right? Where I do wish the game had more options in terms of like, could it use an easy mode? Maybe, right? Like, could it use a assist mode, like how Celeste has, where you can tweak certain mechanics and make it so that, let me give myself a bit more health, or let me make it so that I don't get staggered every time an enemy does this move. I think that stuff is always welcome, and that stuff, to some extent, should always be included. And I think Sifu could use a lot of that. But in terms of the actual designed difficulty, I think it's perfect. I do think it can be a bit obtuse in terms of the learning of it and figuring out like, cool, I see that this game is difficult. Give me the tools to be able to tackle that difficulty. And that's kind of what we're talking about in terms of teaching mechanics, right? Like, teach me why I should avoid versus why I should dodge, why I should counter, like all these things that we've talked about so far. I think that stuff can be onboarded with the player a bit more smoothly and a bit more cleanly. But yeah, I think the actual difficulty of the game is fine. I actually really enjoy it.
I think that a big part of this conversation is how obtuse the game can be and whether you like that or don't like it. I don't think that this game is designed and was the intention was to do that. Like, I think that that is a Souls thing, a Sekiro thing, of like, you just kind of like, there's rules, but you need to figure them out by yourself. This, the fact that this game tells you as much as it does tell you, is evidence to me that that wasn't the case. They wanted people to understand how to play it. They just did a bad job of saying it. And that I think is a bummer. And I think that some of it can be changed. And I think that there are a lot of things about this game that can just be patched and would improve it tenfold. So we'll see how that goes once, you know, now people are playing it. So they're going to get a lot of feedback and we can see what changes they end up making. But yeah, very impressed with this game. And I can't stop thinking about it. I can't stop wanting to play it. Like, it is a very, very amazing video game. And I think it's going to be something special for years to come. And I'm going to be thinking about this game for a 100%. Long time.
I 100% agree. Tim, speaking of games making changes post-launch, story number two, what's up with Halo Infinite? I asked the question because over on Forbes, Paul Tassi writes an article titled Halo Infinite has fallen outside Xbox's top 5, outside of Steam's top 100. The article reads like this. While Halo Infinite debuted with great reviews and a lot of talk about it being a return to form for the series, the game has struggled to retain players past its initial launch period. We're only 2 months post-launch, though closer to 3 months for the early release of multiplayer, and near midway through the game's first 6 month season. But Halo Infinite has fallen outside of Xbox's top 5 most played games. Sitting at number 6 behind long-term leaders, it was unable to unseat for any significant length of time. The top games are Fortnite, Call of Duty Warzone, GTA 5, Apex Legends, Roblox, and then at number 6 you got Halo Infinite. Halo Infinite, of course, is free on Xbox Game Pass, and its multiplayer component is free without Game Pass, so that's not a barrier here. On Steam, things have crashed pretty hard. At the time of writing this, Halo Infinite is number 117 most played, is the number 117 most played game on Steam. Granted, it can shoot up quite a bit during different times of the day, but even at peak hours, when I looked yesterday, it was hovering around 40th place instead. Fact is, the game has lost about 90% of its players on Steam in 2 to 3 months. What's going on here? A few things. Halo Infinite has undergone a number of issues, particularly in regard to its multiplayer. It turned off a number of players with microtransaction pricing and battle pass progression, and though it has made large overhauls in those areas, it may be too late for some. There are issues with cheaters, particularly on PC, which may explain further departures. And ranked Halo Infinite play has been pretty messed up from the start. And recently it seems it was revealed that your quick play MMR factors into your ranked experience, so players are purposefully tanking games in that mode to get easier matches in ranked, screwing up the entire experience. And then there are more general problems with the entire concept of Infinite, something a few high-profile streamers talked about ahead of launch and were chastised for, but they might be right. The fact is, traditional team-based shooters have fallen out of favor, which is Halo's bread and butter. On console, you can see that 3 of the top 5 titles are Battle Royale games. On Steam, the top shooters there are no respawn tactical team games like CSGO or Valorant. It's worth noting that Call of Duty Vanguard and Battlefield 2042 are also even further down on these lists, games with much bigger issues than Infinite has, in addition to being traditional team-based offerings. Tim, you're one of the Halo guys here at Kinda Funny. Have you been keeping up with Halo Infinite? And also, does this surprise you?
I mean, so what surprises me is how this headline doesn't really feel like it's being backed up by the article. Like, I feel like it's kind of, it's misleading a little bit. Like, that while that these are facts, I don't think it's as dire of a situation as it's like leading us to believe. Like, falls outside Xbox's top 5. Okay, it's number 6. So it's like, had this headline just said it's been in the top 10 for months, then it's a positive thing, right? So there's just a framing thing there. It dropping out of the Steam's top 100, I do think, is evidence to where the game is at. And I think that the game clearly has a lot of problems and is struggling to kind of maintain the community that like a game like that requires. And going into all of Paul's points at the end of, you know, people's thoughts towards arena shooters versus team-based shooters versus XYZ, I think that there is a lot of that that plays into it. But games don't need to beat Call of Duty to be successful, right? Like, we can live in a world where we look at these top games, Fortnite, Call of Duty, GTA, Apex, Roblox, and then Halo Infinite. Like, cool. That represents a kind of a swath of different types of games, many different types of shooters even in one go. So I don't think that this is too big of a surprise. I do think that it is a little sad that it seems like Halo didn't capitalize off the momentum that it had at the end of last year, because I would have loved to see them just really kick ass and like take over and bring Halo back to prominence and have it be the number one thing that no one can stop playing because there's just so much content, everyone loves it, and all the decisions were made correctly. But that's not where we're at, and I don't think that we're ever going to be. And I think that when it comes to their content rollout plans and the decisions they've made, they seem to be sticking to some of them, like the progression system, and they seem to be open to feedback on others. And we'll see where we're at in a year from now. But I don't think that this is as doom and gloom as the headline is presenting.
Yeah, I'm right there with you that I don't think it's as doom and gloom, right? I think being number 6 after those 5 listed games, you're talking about Fortnite, Call of Duty Warzone, GTA 5, Apex Legends, and Roblox. And those are all super popular games that have been around for a while and have had time to build up their player bases and maintain those player bases. Halo Infinite, I don't think, is at its peak yet. You know, I think you look at it at you look at it in its launch months and you're like, yeah, okay, like, of course, during this time, it's going to skyrocket because the game is just coming out and you're talking to the Xbox audience. And of course, that audience is going to flock to this. But I think Halo Infinite being kind of a different Halo launch, right? It not being the $60 experience, it being a free to play ongoing platform based game. I think you're going to see it grow over the years, or at least I think that is what the plan is. Whether or not it's successful in that, I think is we're yet to see. But I don't think that right now it not being in the top five is a problem. I think maybe a year from now, us talking about where Halo Infinite lands among everything, that becomes more, it becomes more of a legitimate conversation of how has growth gone, right? How is player retention? Are they bringing back people with updates? Are they bringing back people when they implement Forge, when they implement campaign co-op, when they implement new modes that people are into? I think that becomes more of the thing that we can go and judge by. But for where it's at right now, I don't think it's as wild. I do think that the point that I do like from this article, or that I at least think is interesting, is them talking about the arena shooter thing and how, yeah, right now there's not really a big arena shooter that is maintaining in that top five or in the top watched games on Twitch or any of these other platforms. Where it is, it's about the battle royales, right? It's about the tactical shooters, right? The CSGOs and the Valorants. And I think that's just where we're at, right? I don't necessarily think the article is wrong in that. I also don't think that Halo Infinite has to be the most popular shooter of all time to still be good and still be successful. I think it's fine to be the most popular in a less popular sphere, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's also interesting to note that the Game Pass element, right? So more people, I imagine, are playing on Xbox than they are on Steam. Although I guess the game's free to play multiplayer-wise,
yeah.
Yeah, maybe that wouldn't be too big of a factor. I take that back. But it's also interesting to keep an eye on what you're saying about how Microsoft is treating its games now, whether that's due to Game Pass or just in general with their ecosystem. But like Sea of Thieves, right? Like it coming out and then over the years just getting, like, breaking its own records. I wonder if that definitely can happen for Halo. So we'll see.
I also do wonder, and this is going to be, I think, a thing that we keep an eye on over the years, right? I wonder if Game Pass makes it so that people are moving like a herd, where it is Forza comes out in November, everybody on Game Pass is playing Forza. Halo comes out the next month, everybody migrates to Halo. And then as the months go and as more games on Game Pass go, right? Like, we're talking about how big this last month and the next month are for Game Pass between games like Rainbow Six Extraction and a bunch of other games, Hitman, Nobody Saves the World, all this stuff. Is it a thing of Game Pass players being more, Game Pass players moving from game to game a bit more quicker because they have such a high number of games that they can jump into and they can migrate onto? I think there might be something there, but I also don't think that as specifically the case for Halo Infinite, given that also it's just free to play general, right? And also on PC and all these things. But that is something that, you know, I'd like to float and maybe keep an eye on. But that's for the future. For now, Tim, let's hop in to story number three. Speaking of the future, Sony teases a breakthrough AI project created with Gran Turismo Studio Polyphony. This is Tom Ivan at VGC. And Kevin, I have a video you can pull up at the top of the article in the doc. They can pull up as I'm reading. Sony has teased plans to reveal a breakthrough project in AI later this week. The company's AI division said the project has been created in collaboration with Sony Interactive Entertainment and Gran Turismo studio Polyphony Digital. It also released the following teaser video ahead of the project's official announcement on Wednesday. And this is one that I have nothing to say about. I don't know what this is. I don't know much about Sony AI, but I think it is fascinating. And I'm looking forward to seeing what this is on Wednesday.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this is some weird, real nerdy shit, but like it could be real cool. You know, Gran Turismo is a game that is for a specific audience. That audience is large. It's not quite as large as it used to be relative to all of gaming. I feel like back in the PS1, PS2 era, Gran Turismo really kind of like represented PlayStation gamers in a lot of ways, where now it's just kind of like, you know, another vertical in Sony's many, many like different verticals that it has. But looking at all the stuff from GT7, it's beautiful. Like, this game looks gorgeous, and that's always been a key thing to the Gran Turismo franchise. And what this means, I don't know. Like, what could this even be?
The one theory I have, and people in chat are throwing this out there as well, are Drivatars, which, if you play Forza, right, Drivatars are essentially AI that emulate the way that, like, people on your friends list drive. And so you'll be driving in Forza Horizon open world, and then you'll come across, I'll see, like, Stoic Mike's username on a car, or like my friend Yami's username on a car, or whoever, and I am essentially like racing their drivatar, which has their stats, right? It supposedly drives like them and all this stuff. And now I'm competing against players that are not just random AI, random bots, but it is kind of the people that are on my friends list. I could see this be that, especially since you're talking about Polyphony, you're talking about Gran Turismo, and you're talking about Sony AI. That seems like a thing that works together perfectly, and I'm sure it's a highly requested feature. That's the only thing that comes to mind. But yeah, I don't know what else it would be. I got to guess is that.
Yeah. They're finally going to reveal the AI people from that one PlayStation 5 event.
the long con.
Remember those black silhouettes? It was us the whole time. Now you're going to drive with them.
So funny.
God. Tim, our next news story is a beefy one, and I can't wait to talk about Platinum and the live service focus that they're shifting to. But before we get there, I want to let people know about patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where they can go to get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Look, I get it. You don't watch porn, so maybe you're just paying attention to this ad for, you know, a friend. But with everything going on in the world, governments have increased surveillance. They're using your devices to track your location, movements, and in a lot of places, your internet activity. ExpressVPN reroutes your internet connection through a secure, encrypted server so you can surf the web anonymously. Newsflash, incognito mode is a sham. Your ISP can still see every single site you visit. But with one click of a button, ExpressVPN keeps others from seeing all the freaky stuff you've been looking at. Yeah. Talking about you, Nick Scarpino. We've been using ExpressVPN for a long time. It's been keeping me safe, keeping me secure. I just feel better being out on the internet, knowing that ExpressVPN has my back. Protect your privacy today and get 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Visit expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. That's expressvpn.com/kindoffunny for 3 months free with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/kindoffunny to learn more. Shout out to Chime for sponsoring this episode. New year, new you. Maybe a you who leaves behind things that don't serve you, like those dang overdraft fees. When your checking account balance is running low, the last thing you need is an overdraft fee. But with Chime, an award-winning app and debit card, you can save that hard-earned cash money without paying overdraft fees. Eligible members can overdraft up to $200 on debit card purchases and cash withdrawals with absolutely no overdraft fees. Make your first good decision in 2022 and join over 10 million people using Chime. Sign up only takes 2 minutes and doesn't affect your credit score. You can get started at chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames. Banking services provided by and debit card issued by the Bancorp Bank or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Overdraft only applies to debit card purchases and cash withdrawals. Limits start at $20 and may be increased up to $200 by Chime. See chime.com/spotme and go to chime.com/kfgames to get started.
One.
Tim, story number four.
Before we get to that real quick, Bless, I just want to say, I was looking at myself doing the ad read and I was like, my God, I have so many gray hairs in my beard. Like, life is insane. I'm an old ass man. It's like Sifu in real life, man. But you too, in a different way, you're aging like a fine wine. Can you please bring up this gif here? Who is this 13-year-old boy? Blessing. Man. Oh my God. Why is he so young?
Wait, it's so funny. Because that's not from that long ago.
Yeah, I was going to say that's in your same place. You do look a lot younger.
That was maybe 10 months ago.
Is it
probably
just the hair? Damn,
it's literally just the hair. And was this when I was still trying to grow a beard? No, I'm shaved here. So this must have been. This was either fall 2020 or like maybe like May last year.
Unbelievable.
Hey man,
the globe is real, Bless.
You grow out your hair, you buy a leather jacket, all of a sudden everything changes for you. You start calls from model agencies, Tim. It's great. It's great. It's crazy. You know, it's a wild time. Speaking of wild times, story number four, Platinum's new CEO wants to create larger, riskier games and hence at a live service focus. This is Andy Robinson at Video Games Chronicle. Company co-founder Atsushi Inaba, who recently took over as president and CEO, discussed his promotion in a recent interview with Famitsu, translated by VGC, along with his aspirations for the Bayonetta developer's future. In the interview, Inaba appeared to suggest a larger focus on live service games. He said he would like the company to create more games that can be enjoyed, quote, can be enjoyed and loved for a longer period of time, compared to one-off, well-designed titles such as Bayonetta. and Kamiya's Project GG, which, if you remember Project GG, that is the third entry into like what they're calling the superhero trilogy, which is like Wonderful 101 in those games. Kamiya's Project GG was mentioned specifically by Inaba in relation to his desire to create titles, quote, that are different from the past, end quote. Quote, Project GG is still in the stage of testing various things, so I can't tell you much about it. But when it comes to future game production, we want to focus on creating games that are different from the past. I'd like to focus on creating games that can be enjoyed and loved for a longer period of time, end quote. He added, quote, of course, we would like to cherish and create small and brilliantly conceived games such as Soul Cresta and games in which you can Soul Cresta is a really interesting one to throw out there, and games in which you can enjoy the process of clearing the game by going through one-off, well-designed stages such as Bayonetta. However, the projects that we are trying to create for the future will be different in terms of their structure. Considering the changes in the market over the next 5 years or so, I think it's absolutely necessary for us to do this. I'm sorry for being so vague, and I don't know if you hear whatever's going on in my apartment. There's some loud shit going on today.
It's there, but it's very, very light. A little rumbling.
Okay, that's good.
No biggie.
It's loud on my side, I will tell you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for being so vague, but I think that's all I can tell you for now, end quote. Platinum has previously confirmed that its Tokyo studio was established in 2020 in order to facilitate its desire to expand its live ops games. It's also releasing its first MMO-style title in Babylon's Fall, which was co-developed with Square Enix this year. However, Inaba's latest comments are potentially the first indication of the level of commitment the company intends to place on service games overall. Inaba told Famitsu that Platinum currently has some 300 staff across its Osaka and Tokyo studios, with 70 in the latter, but that he's keen to expand to over 500 in order to match his ambitions for the company. Quote, I'm almost done here. Quote, in the past, even if we wanted to create our own IP, it was difficult to do so. And even if we could, it would be on a very small scale. We could only make indie class products. In the future, I'd like to get rid of all that and make larger games from our ideas and succeed in at least one thing. I want to lead Platinum Games in a direction that is pure and unadulterated and never look back. I think that's my role now. End quote. That was a lot, Tim.
It is. It is a lot. And I think that this is a perfect example of a lot of words being said that can be taken a lot of ways that sound bad. But if you just apply them to like what the reality of the future is going to actually look like, I don't think it's as bad as this potentially sounds and could be. I think this is just them looking at it and like looking at the sales of a lot of their games, and they're just not what they need to be to sustain that level of game development. Like, I was just looking up Bayonetta, and like Bayonetta is not a seller in any way. Mm-hmm. Like, it is very, very, very poorly selling. Like, even the PC version has sold over 170K, and they're really happy with that performance. 170K. Like, that's a low number, bless, compared to millions that you are when you think about when you're talking about modern video games, right? And there's a lot of things there. Exactly. So I don't think it's too big of a surprise, but like it is a bummer, and especially when you look at something like Bayonetta 3 that's been in development for a very long time, or at least been a project that exists for a very long time. Has it changed? What does the scope of that project look like? I don't know. But even looking at Platinum's other projects, like I just think that there's many shifts happening in the industry right now, and I think a lot of the Japanese developers are kind of trying to figure out their take on a lot of the more Western ideologies when it comes to game development and microtransactions and service games and all of that stuff. How do they apply some of those things into their development? That's what we're going to see in the next coming years.
Yeah. I get worried about this mainly for what we've seen happen with Babylon's Fall, where that game was revealed years and years ago at E3. Looks super dope, right? Was teased as from the same folks as the Nier games that you love. And then a couple years later, we see Babylon's Fall reemerge, and it looks trash, right? It looks not good whatsoever. And then it comes out that, oh no, this is not going to be a games as a service title. I don't want to see that happen to Platinum in terms of us seeing more and more games that look like that. I don't think this is I don't want to be doom and gloom about it, because I don't think it's completely doom and gloom. I think there could be something promising here if they're able to figure out how to manage their titles in a way where these types of games don't replace what we love about Platinum. Because I think what we love about Platinum are these well-designed, really cool, somewhat niche action titles, right? That is where they exceed, right? It's The Vanquish, it is Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, it is Astral Chain, it is Nier Automata, right? These are the kind of games that they've become known for and that people revere them for. And I get fearful when they talk about this shift to live service, and especially when their first foot forward is Babylon's Fall, and that game has seemingly no hype whatsoever anymore. I don't think I've seen anybody talk about them being excited for Babylon's Fall anymore, and that's a bummer. And it comes back to, you know, you being right in terms of, are these games selling, right? Like, are these games making money for Platinum? And the answer is probably not enough. And I totally understand that shift. It's similar to what we're talking about with Sony right now in terms of them buying Bungie and then talking about leaning into live service games. I do think the difference there is that, like, with Sony, I don't expect live service games to replace anything that Sony has going on, right? Ghost of Tsushima is not going to go away. Whatever the next Last of Us game is not going to go away, right? Spider-Man is not going to go away. Everything seems like it's going to be additive, and I expect quality from that. Whereas, you know, talking to Greg and having the conversation on Gamescast, actually, about the Activision Blizzard acquisition, and Greg making the very solid points in terms of third-party AAA development is so difficult and is in a place where you're so beholden to how much money you're making. Platinum Games is in a place where, yeah, they're probably like, dude, we make these dope-ass games. They are not selling and not making us money, and it's either we shift or we don't make games anymore because we're not able to sell these things. And that sucks. That sucks as a place to be in. And I hope they're able to make it work. Like, I hope they're able to, you know, make these games that make the money, but also make the games that we love at the same time. But I get worried that they're not going to be able to. I think that's where I come from.
I mean, the last thing I want to say about this, though, is we should keep our eyes on Bayonetta 3, because it is going to be a very different situation than we've seen before with the previous Bayonetta games. Bayonetta 1 did fairly well overall, but that was because it was on multiple consoles. If I remember correctly, it was like a timed exclusive or something. Like, it was only on PS3 or 360 and then came to the other later. You can go to, you're wrong about that, but whatever. At some point, it was on multiple consoles close enough to its original launch, whereas Bayonetta 2 was stuck on the Wii U, right? Yeah. So, like, that's a whole set of issues to itself. But then later, they ported it to other systems. But, like, that type of port doesn't get the insane push of marketing that Nintendo would do for a port of something like Mario 3D World or something like that, right? So even that sold okay, but, like, it didn't have the Switch bump. Right, Bayonetta 3, if pushed right from Nintendo, could get that Switch bump and can kind of have that, like, multi-million sales, like, number of, like, oh shit, they did it, you know. But we'll have to wait and see whenever that game actually comes out.
God, yeah, Bayonetta 3. Do you think it's gonna come out this year? I think it's gonna come out this year. It's got to, right?
Like, it's got to. I think. I mean, they just last week during Nintendo's financial reports thing said 2022 for Bayonetta 3, and while that doesn't mean shit, because they also said that about Breath of the Wild, like, I'm hopeful.
Final question. I know we've been talking about acquisition a lot. And, like, I go very back and forth on acquisition in terms of, like, hating corporate consolidation, but also, like, seeing some of these developers and being like, oh, man, I hope. Like, I look at Konami and I'm like, please get acquired by PlayStation, because you guys are not doing anything with Metal Gear, right? And, like, Platinum, as they're talking about the shift, as they're talking about live service, I'm like, oh, man, are you guys in trouble? Like, do you guys need help? And with that, like, do you think they could get acquired? And if so, who do you think goes after them? Because I could see a case for PlayStation, obviously, but I could also see a case for Nintendo.
Oh, interesting. I feel like Nintendo don't need to.
They don't need to.
And the thing about Nintendo is they are traditional in a lot of ways, and they don't change. They just kind of stick to how they do things, and how they do things is often weird, the weird Nintendo decisions, but, like, it's consistently weird in a way that we're the type of teams and things that they acquire aren't Platinum, right? Like, it's a different genre of studio. I think that their partnerships make the most sense for them, and they don't really need to go any deeper than that. Like, I don't think that Nintendo has much to gain acquiring Platinum. I guess it's kind of the point that they're not already getting just from their strategic partnerships and kind of the co-production and stuff of things like Bayonetta 3, right? Where it very much is a Nintendo published game.
Yeah, I mean, Bayonetta 3, I look at Astral Chain as well, which I don't know the Astral Chain numbers and how well that sold. I can't imagine that sold great, even though I fucking loved Astral Chain. But, like, God, I want them to keep making those games is my thing. And, like, I think that partnership has produced some pretty cool titles, and, like, I could see it just from that perspective. But also from the PlayStation side, I think Platinum, I can see PlayStation making good use of Platinum and maintaining those kinds of games and being able to say, like, hey, you come to PlayStation for are like the PlayStation as PlayStation game. We're now taking Platinum and making them like turning them into that type of game in terms of like, you know, you're coming to us for the action hack and slash games that are at the best quality possible. I could see PlayStation turning Platinum into that.
Astral Chain, as of March 2020, so this is very, very, very outdated at this point, has sold over 1.08 million copies. So there's the Switch bump,
yeah, okay.
Right? Like, that's for a new IP on the Switch, like that's great. So cool. Maybe there's a future ahead for Platinum.
Maybe there's a future ahead. Tim, speaking of game sales, story number 5, Dying Light 2 is selling like hotcakes. This is Adam Bankhurst at IGN. Dying Light 2 appears to be off to a strong start, as it has already shambled its way onto Steam's top 25 most played games of all time, with a peak concurrent player count of 274,983 players. It's a large number. According to SteamDB, Dying Light 2, which has greatly outperformed the original Dying Light's all-time peak of 45,876 players, has passed both Colat, and Halo Infinite to place 23rd on the list of Steam's most played games of all time by concurrent players, and it sits behind The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim. For comparison, PUBG Battlegrounds is holding strong onto the number one spot with an all-time peak of 3.2 million players. In a distant second sits Counter-Strike Global Offensive with 1.3 million players. Tim, does this surprise you? Dying Light 2 killing it.
I mean, yo, it's kind of just video games nowadays, right? Like, there's more gamers out there than ever. There's more ways to play these games. I think that PC gaming is, like, definitely adopted by more people than ever. So, like, I'm not that surprised. Like, I feel like every time games are released now, there's going to be records broken because there's just more people interested in these type of games. And, again, Dying Light 1 came out and had that amazing moment where it like redefined what a January, February time frame can look like for games. And here we are with Dying Light 2, 7 years, whatever later. And it's, I think, kind of just ironically hit at the right time, like right before this rush of all the February games coming out. And like, I think that we could not have called this. Like, Dying Light 2 became one of those overexposed games in terms of preview coverage and its development and everything. And the pandemic certainly didn't help with all that. But hey, good for them, man.
Yeah, Dying Light is for sure onto something. I like it being in the top 25 of all time in terms of concurrence on Steam is really impressive. It's even more, it's mind blowing to me when it's above like Halo Infinite and multiplayer games that you would expect, you know, be have that staying power in that top 25. Dying Light 2 as an open world AAA third party zombie game strikes me as a wild one for that. But also, I think that probably speaks to how they've treated that IP over the last however many years, with Dying Light 1 coming out and then them sustaining that game with update after update after update, adding in a multiplayer mode, adding in all these different things to Dying Light 1, and probably having a very sticky fan base because they've not let that fan base go over the years. And so when you release a big new title, it has that, it feels like not just a second sequel, right? It doesn't feel like a second game of the franchise. It feels like another entry into a long-storied franchise because they've kind of been treating it that way, even though it has two in the title. You know what I mean? Like, it has that staying power, which is really impressive, and I would not have called this, but you'll get them Dying Light 2.
Yeah, man, dude, video games are cool. This year's about to be absolutely wild. Like, plus, I can't wait to where in December, looking back, like, what's this year going to look like? Like, what is the game of the year conversation going to be? Because it's just going to be great, man. Yeah, so much quality. Wait
for it. Give me Starfield. Hopefully Starfield comes out in November because I really want to play that game. Tim, let's hop into story number 6. Bandai Namco is developing its own game engine. This is from Theodore Nikitin at 80 level, which is an outlet I've not heard of, but Greg put it in here, so I trust him. Bandai Namco Entertainment, a Japanese video game publisher, has revealed that it has been working on its own game engine for at least 3 years. During an interview with Automation Media, Bandai Namco's Katsusuke Horiuchi has confirmed that the company is developing a new engine to limit the reliance on third-party technology like Unity and Unreal Engine. The company, however, will continue to use them, but only alongside its own engine, and only when it's completely necessary. The development of Bandai Namco's in-house engine is being led by Julian Mercerin, who has previously worked on Konami's Fox Engine, as well as various other game engines. The development team consists of 50 people. The interview also mentions that there are no titles currently in development for the company's upcoming engine. Quote, "The reason for in-house production is that we want to continue to have the technological capabilities to create a solid foundation by ourselves, rather than leaving the base to game engines made by other companies," said Katsusuke Horiuchi. Cool. you know, this is a very interesting one that we'll kind of have to wait and see what this turns into. But it being worked on by folks who are involved with Fox Engine, at the very least, is exciting because Fox Engine is off the chain. And we did not see enough games come out of that.
We really didn't, man. Fox Engine and RE Engine are just two things that are so near and dear to my heart, where I just love them. I love them so much. And I just want to see more. But I don't know that we're ever going to get another Fox Engine game. Less.
Man, it sucks, right? Like, Metal Gear Solid 5, I remember 2015, right? It was fall. Metal Gear Solid 5 just came out, and I was playing it in my bedroom, and I was having a great time. And, like, I remember one cutscene where it was Snake. He was hopping out of a helicopter, as you do in that game, you know, so many times.
As you do.
He was hopping into the base, right? And, like, it just clicked for me where I was like, this might be one of the best-looking games I've ever seen in my life.
Dude, I often think back to even Ground Zeroes when it first came out, and I'm watching this shit, and I'm like, how is the camera moving this way? Like, it is so cinematic. It looks so fucking good. And, like, you look back at it now, and it still looks good so many years later. And the most shocking thing about it is that game wasn't just on what was at the time the next gen, current gen of PS4. It was also on PS3 and 360, and it looked amazing. That engine is magic, man.
I mean, could you imagine that engine on the PS5? Like, what those games would look like, how those games would run?
No, I can't.
Give it to me. One day. I mean, hey, maybe this Bandai Namco engine might be somewhat comparable. Probably won't be, but, like, I can hope. I can dream. Let's round out the report is story number 7. It looks like the Batman Arkham games could be coming to Switch. This is Jordan Midler at Video Games Chronicle. And as a reminder, Jordan Midler will be making an appearance on KFGD on Wednesday, hosting with me, so look forward to that. Batman Arkham Collection has been listed for release on Nintendo Switch by a French retail site. According to French retailer WTT, which I'm just going to say stands for Watch the Throne. I don't know that to be true.
Hell yeah.
I'm just going to go with it. The game will cost €59.99 in euros and currently holds a placeholder release date of August 31st, 2022. Watch the Throne previously listed the Switch port of the Witcher 3 Wild Hunt before its announcement, potentially lending legitimacy to the Batman listing. Arkham Collection was released for other PC or other consoles and PC in 2018 and includes Rocksteady's 3 Arkham games, Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, and Arkham Knight. Tim, are you down to hop into some Arkham on Switch?
No, that doesn't sound like a good time at all. These Switch ports, man, they're just never great. They're always like an inferior way to play the game. And, like, that I think is one of the biggest limitations of the Switch, is it, and it has been for years now, but it's just showing its age and its design philosophy, in the sense that, like, it can play these games, but should it play these games?
Yeah, but should it be one too?
Like, yeah, that's the thing, is, like, I just feel like there's so many better ways to play a lot of these, like, collections that are being put on Switch. That's not true all the time, but I don't know. This cool that it's happening, but, like, is it going to be cloud based? There's always a catch.
Yeah, you saying cloud based makes me a little bit scared. But, like, these are, when you're talking about Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, right? Like, those are games that ran on 360 and PS3, which I'm sure is comparable enough to the Switch that and the Wii U. I forgot that Arkham came out on the Wii U. But, like, you imagine that the Switch would be able to run those fine. Of course, this is a collection that I'm sure is remastered, so maybe there are some technical stuff there that makes those games a bit more hard to run, but we'll see with it. I hope it's good. I know Barrett Courtney will probably play this, and I await to hear his thoughts. But yeah, Arkham, there you go. If you're a Switch fan, if you're an Arkham fan, have fun. Tim, I'm excited to see if these games are good, but the release of the Arkham games on Switch is just so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to Mom and Drop Shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Unstrong Legacy for Switch, Heroes of Loot 2 for Switch, and then Disco Elysium, the Final Cut Jamais Vu update is now available on PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch. We got one new date for you. Rover Mechanic Simulator is coming to Nintendo Switch on February 18th. So there you go. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong, where you write in and let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong, so we can correct it for those watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. Nano's being technical in here. All right, Nano. Nano writes in and says the Sifu trophy is 25 and under, not under 25. So you get a little extra buffer there. You know where we went.
Paper Boy writes in and says, Tim's incorrect. Gran Turismo is still a huge seller. Gran Turismo 5 is the best-selling exclusive on PS3, and Gran Turismo Sport has outperformed Gran Turismo 6. So my point that I'm making is that relative to PlayStation games selling, it's no longer the number one. Like, you're talking about that's PS3. That's 10 years ago. I'm talking about, like, Gran Turismo used to be, like, the top selling, and now it's just a very high selling.
Nano writes in and says, Bayonetta released the same day on PS3 and 360. It was just a delayed launch from Japan to international release. And then one more from Charles Jacobson. The Fox engine was retired with the 2020 update for eFootball Pro Evolution Soccer 2020. Konami has since then changed to Unreal Engine 4. So rest in peace, Fox Engine. That is the saddest thing I could read.
That just depressed, man. I just looked up YouTube videos of Ground Zeroes running on 360, and it's just mind-blowing. How?
Bring it back. Bring it back. Tim, today's Monday. We got a whole week ahead of us. So that means I should tell you about this week's host. Tomorrow, you're getting Greg and Gary Whitta. Wednesday, you're getting me and Video Game Chronicles' Jordan Midler. On Thursday, you're getting Greg and Tim. Then on Friday, it's me and Aaron A. Simon. So look forward to that. If you're watching this live on Twitch right now, after this is Mike, Andy, and Nick on a Twitch stream. What are they streaming? I'm not sure. Kevin, do you know
Sifu.
What they're streaming?
They're streaming Sifu, baby.
Yeah, Sifu.
Heck yeah, so that's going to be a fun time. If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.